A Hindu perspective is that constant change is the only changeless factor in our lives. Although this has been the case for generations, it is even more drastic in today's world. We may not be able to control the world around us, but we can certainly maintain a degree of control in our lives, which will help us maintain our cool in this world of ups and downs. Let us look at a simple 10-step recipe for getting along with people and with the world around us so we are able to maintain a level of harmony between ourselves and the world around us. Maha Devji is a pastor at the Chennamaya Mission of Southern California, where he teaches classes in Vedanta. He has been a disciple of Chinmayananda since first meeting him in 1978. Maha Devji has a PhD in physics and worked as an engineer before devoting full-time to Vedanta. He has spoken here at UUCF several times. Please join me in welcoming Maha Devji.
Good morning. Nothing like a little bit of music to start off. So I'm going to start chanting a little bit. And what that chant means, it is a prayer to the Lord asking Him to bless both of us so that you are good listeners and I'm a good speaker during this time. Because if your minds are not available and my mind is not, if I'm not very good at speaking, then we are in trouble. So this is a prayer to that, and also a prayer to my spiritual teacher, Swami Chinmayananda. Okay?
Sahana bhunaktu, sahaviryam karavavahai, tejasvina vadhitamastu mavit vishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Samasta jana kalyane niratam karunamayam, namami chinmayam devam sadgurum brahma vidvaram.
So we're going to talk about a 10-step, you know, of course, there are many, many other steps. But I picked out 10 very important things that we could follow in our daily life to make life a little easier. Easier in relation to interaction with the world around us. You know, if you watch that movie Forrest Gump, he said life is like a box of chocolates. You remember that? That is a very important thing. You need to peel the wrapper and then only you can enjoy the chocolate inside. Right? So you need to find a way to handle the people around you so you can enjoy the world within you and the world around. So you need to unwrap that part. And also, you know that wherever there is a rose, there is a thorn. If you strip away the thorns, you can enjoy the rose. I mean, you know, right? Here are some ways to handle ourselves and the people around us. Simplicity is next to spirituality and intelligent living. That's what they say. Our simple nature, unfortunately, is covered by a layer of negativity. And, you know, if you look at the word complicated in Latin, it says complicatus. Complicatus means complicated. That's in Latin. But you know, it also means folded. So what we are is a complex folded. We are like a complex folded person within us right now. So we need to unfold. And that's what self-unfoldment means. When you say self-unfoldment, that means it's opening your mind out and opening it out to the world around you and picking up the vibrations from everything around you, keeping an open mind and doing things. So the simple and divine nature of ours is covered by all these folds and different layers of our personality. And of course, all these obviously have to do with the mind. So the primary goal in life should be self-unfoldment. That means to open up the mind and look around and understand that everything around you, there is a divinity all around us. Okay. Here are like 10 rules of conduct that will help us develop that awareness. And the spirit of inquiry into what's around us and to spiritually unfold. And this will help you develop patience, reduce and eliminate mistakes and anger, and develop the right attitude in life, and help develop your personal, professional, and your social life. So, let us look at the first rule here. Responding to life's challenges. You know that life is full of challenges, and many times you have to respond to these challenges. You can't just sit quiet. When responding, don't make any impulsive decisions. You know, think, reflect, inquire before responding. You know, they say before you get angry, count to 10. I would say count to 1,000. Don't count to 10. you have to give your intellect time to recoup. Otherwise, you're not acting according to your human nature. Your human nature human beings have an intellect, and that intellect is meant to think, and not to just fly off the handle just like that. Okay. Therefore, we need to really keep that in mind. So that helps you. Before you get angry, count, go on counting. And then by the time your mind will calm down. By the time you finish 1,000. Okay, hopefully, yeah. Okay, so then, the other thing is, how do you reflect or inquire? You know, because you need to reflect, right, after all this. In confrontation with any other person, before responding, ask yourself these four questions. Do I know for sure that what I hear or believe about the person is true? The first thing. Second, is my response necessary? Third, is my response kind or reasonable? And fourth, will my response help the resolution? Now, so if you find that these answers are right, then go ahead and respond. See, because now we've already inquired. Once you do the process of inquiry, it makes a big difference. Because you're not just doing something randomly. You know, you're using your intellect. It is which is meant to be used for these things. Then the second thing, making promises and keeping promises. Try not to make any promises, first of all. But if you have to, do so sparingly. Check out your health and commitments before making a promise. Think of what you're promising. Example, with children, grandchildren, your spouse or a friend. And when you make a promise, keep it, because they will expect you to deliver on that promise. Okay? So I'm not saying don't make promises, but be very aware of what you're promising. Do not make promises that can land you in a physical or mental problem, because a promise is a commitment that the other side expects you to fulfill. So second thing is keeping promises. Third thing, words of encouragement to others. Don't miss the opportunity to compliment or encourage one who has done good work. However insignificant. You know, there's a story in our scripture where, you know, the Lord was trying to cross the ocean to go for a very important task. And there was no way. You know, this is like the ocean. If you look at India, that between Sri Lanka and India, that ocean, you know, that stretch. Okay, so there was no way to cross it just like that. So they had to put boulders and everything else. So they did all kinds of things to this. And a little chipmunk said, what can I do, you know, to help this Lord? And you know what it did? It went and rolled into the water, got the sand on it, then went into the sand, rolled into the sand, and dumped the sand back into the water. And it did that again and again. Now, it may look meaningless to us, but the attitude It is so important that it's not how much you do, it's how you do what you do that is very, very important. Okay? So the small things really, really count. Okay? Then the next thing is, and the other thing, you know the story about the starfish, how this little boy was, he found the starfish on the beach and he started throwing them, and a guy came out there and he was looking at him and he was laughing. He said, you know, you think you're going to make a difference to all, there are so many starfish. Then the little boy just said, I did make a difference to that one, because he had just tossed one in there, okay. So, and then the other thing, you know, you have heard about Moses and the shepherd, that story, because I hope I got this right, but what happened was, you know, the shepherd was taking care of his sheep. He used to comb it and do everything and, you know, take care of it so well. And Moses went and told him, how come you're spending so much time on this? Huh? When you spend more time on the Lord. Then the poor shepherd got turned off. He said, you know, what is this? You know, how can somebody tell me like that? I'm doing what I can. And the Lord came in the dream of Moses and told him, Why do you interfere with somebody who is trying to take care of me? See, the Lord is in every single form of life. That is what he meant. That don't move. Don't, you know, when somebody has faith in something, don't shake that faith just like that. Because everything, you know, if you look at it in real fact, you know, at least our scripture says that every single thing, the divinity is present in every single thing. Manifested and unmanifested also. Okay. Then fourth thing, care in speech, how you speak. If at all you speak kind words. Speak the truth, but not in an unpleasant manner. You know, you don't say, I'll give this example to the little kids in school. You know, supposing one of the girls doesn't have her hair done properly. And the other one says, terrible, look at it. Look at your hair. What a mess. That's not what you say. You say, hey, come here. I've got a new hairstyle for you. You know, and you go and take her there and show her that. See, there's an approach to everything. Even when you tell the truth, tell it in a pleasant way. The scripture says that. It says, satyam bruyat, priyam bruyat, na bruyat, asatyam apriyam. It's telling you not to do that. And then second thing, avoid gossip. Poisonous words have destroyed many a home and country. Then, the other thing, words spoken impulsively or in anger cannot be recalled. So be very aware of how you speak. Do not speak or project negative thoughts. Make everything positive. See, whenever you tell somebody also to do something, do it in a positive way. You know, hey, here's another way. But never make that person, because that person gets a very negative vibe. And whatever that person was doing, and he was going probably a little bit away from the track, but he was going to come back. But it takes him time to come back. Therefore, we must allow that time for that person. Okay, then the next thing is, silence is the greatest defense against anger. If somebody is angry, just be quiet. You know, also remember, out of silence come words of power. When you're silent, you know, see, it's as if when you're silent, God is speaking to you. God is speaking through you. When we speak, God is quiet. But when you are quiet, God speaks through you. So that's why that silence has such a big, you know, St. Francis, when he gave a speech out there, you know, a lot of people were saying, be quiet, be quiet, be quiet, and all that crowd didn't quieten down at all. But when he came there and said just one word, and he kept quiet, there was utter silence in there. You could tell, you know, because that person was a person of silence. He was a man of silence. He was a saint, great saint. So a great saint influences like that, you know, through that. So out of silence come words of power. Then, avoid the terrible sets of three. What are those three? Desire, anger, and greed. These three things can, you know, they're called the gateway to hell. Hell, I'm not talking about the hell down there. I'm talking about the hell over here. when you interact with society and everything else, your life will become miserable when you do all these, when you have all these things. You know, they say let your desires be sattvic. Sattvic means let them be in a very positive direction. You know, let them be moving forward towards your evolution, not downwards. And anger, if you can get consciously anger, it'd be very good. But who do you think can get consciously anger? if you get consciously angry, then you're not angry, by definition, isn't it? So consciously, doing everything consciously is very important. And greed, again greed also. You know, like so many people, you know, they get panicky and they hoard and hoard and hoard and they don't care for the others, you know. That also must be avoided. Attachment, fear and anger, those are another three. All these contribute to the downfall of a person as a human being. You know, and there are proactive and retroactive approach to avoiding this. I'll explain that if I have time. Let me go through this first, okay? In anger, okay? Let me explain the process of anger. You know, when you look at an object or a person, and then the thought comes to you, oh, it'll be nice if I get that object or that person, you know? And then that thought goes in your mind. Now, the thought is in your mind. But if you just let it go at that point and say, if it comes to me, fine. If it doesn't come, fine. Then no problem. But if you take that seriously, you put that thought in your mind and go on thinking about it, and you make up a story, oh, that thing will look very nice in my house, who else deserves it more than I do, and you do all that, then very soon you start believing that you deserve that object or that person. And sometimes if it's a person, you get into trouble. If it's an object, you may not get into trouble, but you may not find the object. Maybe 2-3 people want the same object, isn't it? So therefore, what you do is, that power that is there, if you let it go at that point, you've done the job and you've done the proactive job of stopping your anger. But otherwise what happens? That desire becomes very strong. The desire becomes an attachment, and the attachment becomes it becomes obsessive. And when it becomes obsessive, you cannot let go of that thing or that person. And you really feel that who else deserves that more than anybody, and I won't allow anything to come in the way. And when something comes in the way, then there's a problem. When the person or an object comes in the way of your desire and thwarts your desire, then there's a problem. So this is what we need to avoid. And you know what? The scripture says that when a person gets angry in that way and suddenly impulsively flies off the handle, that person has lost the ability to think. And when you lose the ability to think, you lose the dignity of being a human being. Because even animals don't react like that. they do things instinctively. But a human being who reacts like that and very angry and gets so violent, that is bad. So the Lord says that, Lord Krishna says that in the Gita, that anger has to go. A person who is at that level, who intellectually falls, has fallen from his human dignity. And that is why you can be reborn as something else. You see, that is why we believe the rebirth. Okay? Because if you don't deserve to have that intellect, what's the good of the intellect? Okay? So you're reborn as an animal or whatever. Okay. So then the other thing is here, in care and speech. Yeah. You know, they say that prosperity resides on the tip of the tongue. And friends are also found there on it. That means the gift of the gab. You know, if you can speak well, you can make money on it. You can do a lot of things. There are so many people doing all that. You see that. You know, get a better memory, get this, get that, do that. You make more money, you know. And a lot of people make money on these things, isn't it? So you must be very careful, because that the tip of your tongue also has the ability to get you arrested. If you say something wrong, you can get arrested. If you say something good, good things will come to you. Okay? So care and speech. Then care and speech and eating. The tip of your tongue has the capacity to arrest you, and verily death resides on it. The tongue is like a sword. A sword can kill a human being as well as cut a fruit. It is in our hands to use it wisely. So use the instrument properly. The tongue. Very important. Okay? It's also applicable to right food and not overeating. Okay, you see, I'll tell you one thing. If you eat consciously, you can never be overweight. You don't have to go to Jenny Craig, any of these people who are weight reduction systems. You don't have to go anywhere. Because if you eat consciously, you are not eating. The Lord in you is doing that eating. Okay? If you have that, and so the conscious eating, you know, that means take the food, put it in your mouth, chew it, swallow it, then take the next one, chew it. And don't think it's a boring thing to do that. That, oh, the pizza tastes so good, I must go on eating it just like that. No. If you eat it consciously, you will also taste, you will also know the true taste of the food. Okay? Sometimes you miss the taste, you miss the real taste because you hurry up eating. The process of eating also as we enjoy it. Huh? But you enjoy it by being conscious, by eating consciously. When you eat consciously, you will never become overweight. Okay? In fact, we are supposed to do everything consciously. Because consciousness is our nature. Awareness is our nature. Huh? So if you do everything consciously, you are way ahead. Okay? Okay, then forgiveness. Forgiveness is strength. Yeah? Mahatma Gandhi said, the weak can never forgive. Forgiveness is the attribute of the strong. Anger is weakness, forgiveness is strength. Remember, to err is human, to forgive is divine. You know that. It's very, very well known. Huh? And most people, and remember also, you know, whenever you start getting angry, because particularly somewhere you're in a line and things are going slowly, remember that most people are doing the best they can. Huh? So give them a little slack. You know, sometimes the line is so long, and then everywhere else, you know, in the traffic, you're in the traffic lights, you know. Let me tell you one little thing that I did. You know these traffic lights that you have going into the freeway, huh? The carpool lane. Huh? You stand there, and if you're not in the carpool, you're alone, you stand in that long line. And then I used to complain, what is it? Look at this, I'm standing here such a long time. Then I said, okay, let me sit and time it. And I timed it. It just took me 2 minutes to go through about 15 cars. And I said, is it worth it? You know? So, you know, ask yourself, if you become aware of what you're doing, that awareness will pull you back into the right habits. By the way, you should read a book. It's called The Power of Habit. Huh? It's a yellow paperback. I got it from Costco some time ago. It's very nice. I think the author is like Chugg or something like that. But it shows you how a habit is formed and how to break that habit and what is the little... You use one little thing, you know. All these great people, the guy who's made Starbucks a success, he used that. The CEO of Alcoa Aluminum Products. He used that. Huh? The Olympic swimmer, I think his name was Phelps or something. Yeah. He used that, this technique. And all of them were great success stories. They're very, very good. And they will do good because if you have a habit that you want to kick, but it's getting into you and making you seriously make a lot of mistakes, you can change something in your routine and adjust the whole thing so that, you know, everything goes smoothly. Okay? So, forgiveness. Huh? Then the next thing, yeah, forgiveness is the true ornament. What place does forgiveness have in the spiritual maturity of a human being? Beauty is like an ornament of the human being. Good qualities are an ornament of beauty. Knowledge is an ornament of good qualities, and forgiveness is an ornament of knowledge. It's a very beautiful saying. It's a Sanskrit saying. Huh? Then, six, keeping an open mind. In any situation, be open-minded. Don't jump to conclusions. Look at the pros and cons of the issue. Open the windows of the mind so that all ideas, thoughts are heard. Discuss a problem. Don't argue. You know, particularly with your kids and teenagers, it's very difficult. But you sit down with them. Hey, let's talk about it. And slowly go through this, you know. They say that, you know, when you have kids, little kids, treat them, in the beginning, treat them, put the discipline in them. But when they pass that teenage, when they go to 10, 12, like that, 12, 13, then become a friend. And talk to them as a friend. Don't talk to them as an overbearing parent. Get you into trouble. I'm telling you from a lot of experience. So it is. So if you do that, then you deal with them correctly. Take them out for a good movie. Take them out for dinner. All those. Do everything with them. So you become, you have to earn their trust. And after all, that's what you're trying to do. What else? We exist. We are here for our kids also, aren't we? So we should do that. So if you do that, it will help you with all that. So then, the other thing is, yeah, keeping an open mind. Discuss a problem. You may disagree without being disagreeable. Okay? Remember, that's another thing, right? Now, another thing. If you think about... Don't have this kind of philosophy. This is mine or somebody else's. Is the way of a narrow-minded figure. That means if you say this is mine alone, and nobody else's. If you do that, that You know, you should not do that. Try not to do that. Try not to be very possessive of things. Okay, it'll get you in trouble also. But for the open or broad-minded, the whole earth is their family. You know, if you notice, if I'm here, I can only see this room. If I go higher, I can see more of this area. If I go higher and higher, I can see. If I go inside on a spaceship, I can see the whole earth. And if I go in a plane, I can see a lot. I can see the whole country and many others. But see, what is this telling you? Philosophically, it's telling you that the higher you evolve spiritually, the more you see. That means look at everything from a great perspective. You know, there are companies who hire people from outside to come and take a look at their company. Why do they do that? Because they feel that, inside, you know, everybody inside is already has a mindset and they won't look at it in a very impartial way. But if you had this, you could look at the whole problem, you know, from a different vision. So have that higher vision. Look at everything from another point of view. Keep an open mind. You see, you are able to see the forest from the trees. That's what it is. And then the other thing, don't toot your own horn. That's another thing. You know, when your pride kicks in, brush it off with the understanding in the Gita. And what is the understanding it says? You know, the Lord says, I am the splendor of the splendid. Remember that everything is a glory of the Lord shining in everybody. When everybody is doing something very good, that the Lord is present in that, manifest in that being, because that being is a purer being. You know? So God manifests in every person actually. But you just have to let it happen. And to let it happen, you need to work on the mind. When your mind is pure, God will be manifest even more. Okay? That's the whole philosophy of Vedanta also. You know, there is a thing here, it says, there's a very nice Sanskrit verse. It says, where I shine, neither the sun, the moon, nor the stars shine. My light illumines all that is, and my glory shines everywhere. That's the word of the Lord. See, actually it says His glory shines. The Lord Himself doesn't say, but I'm saying that's what it is. Okay. So the point is that everything that you see around you is the glory of the Lord. You know, you might not like certain things, but you see, even, you know, like for example, little kids, they say yuck, you know, little creatures and things like that. Oh, yuck, you know. But even all those yucky little things have their own beauty, their own greatness. You know, take a snail, insignificant looking thing, but it can crawl on the ground so comfortably. Can you and I do that? No, we can't. A scorpion stings, but it stings only when you put your foot on it, naturally it will sting. What else would you expect? You know, when you hurt something, it is just reacting to whatever happens. See, a human being has an intellect, and that intellect must be used to, we must use it to think about all these things. Animal, they cannot think. And they go by intuition. And when they go by intuition, the Lord who is present in everything is present in them, and so it manifests in animals. See, that's why dogs, you love dogs, isn't it? In general, we all love dogs. They have loyalty, everything. That's why it comes spontaneously. All they need is a little love, and they don't care what else you do. It's amazing. You know, there was a thing on National Geographic. The guy had he owned a jeep, and he was in the desert. And he was driving, and he has a little dog. And that little dog used to come and play with him, and he used to run alongside the jeep. At one point, there was a dust storm in front, and the dog ran in front of the jeep and got run down. It died. Okay? And so the jeep ran over the dog. And then, you know, he wondered what's going on. And when the dust storm cleared, he saw that his son is just a few yards away from there. And if he had gone at that same speed, he would have hit his son. See, look at that, you know, such sacrifice, you know, amazing. You must have seen so many of these happen, you know. There are so many of those also on Google, and you know, you see all those things. Pigs, even pigs, God, every single animal, you know, they have that built into them. So what about us? You know, we have to have that also inside. It is there, but our ego, ego comes in the way and doesn't allow us. See, so we must let go and let God. That should be the thing, okay. Okay, then, the other thing is, welcome criticism. You know, whenever criticism comes, Welcome it. Be honest to yourself. Keep an open mind and act on it if it is true. Brush it off and step on it if it is false. Yeah. And then turn lemon into lemonade. You know all these things, right? Huh? I'll tell you something else, but there's a very nice story I have to tell you about. I'm running out of time also, mighty God. Okay. Then learn to laugh at your own problems. Learn to laugh rather than despair. Huh? They say laughter is the shortest distance between two people. Hmm? You know that in India and Bombay, everything, they practice laughter yoga. They just laugh, just like that. There's no reason to laugh, there's nothing to laugh. Just ha ha ha. Just do that. Yeah, it may look silly, but who cares? you just laugh. You just laugh and have a good laugh. That's it. And it helps because, you know, the muscles in the face are so tense and it helps you relax. Okay? It takes 43 muscles to frown and 17 to smile. You infuse joy into others by laughing rather than frowning. St. Francis' prayer, look at this. Do not seek so much to be consoled as to console. Do not seek so much to be understood as to understand. Do not seek so much to be loved as to love. Right? It is in giving that we receive. All these things are, you know those things, okay? And then, how do you live your life eventually? Don't lament over the past. Don't be anxious over the future. And be present in whatever you do. See, if you do everything consciously, you are truly living as God wanted us to live. Because we are conscious beings. We have to manifest that consciousness in what we do. See, when I move this, it's not a random thing. I move it. You know, it may look very trivial, but it's not. Every single action that you do is very, very important. And you do it meticulously with care. Because you're doing it for God. Remember that. Setting the table, doing this, doing that, washing the dishes. You know, don't think washing the dishes is, it's a chore. It's not. Every single thing is a prayer. Remember that. Huh? Okay. And then, okay. So understand that the present moment alone is real. Okay? So you must be present in whatever you do. You know, there's let me conclude by saying, in India we have this little thing, it's like a grinding wheel. It's got two stone things, okay? And you put the grain in between and you grind it, right? Now, what happens when you go on grinding it, you'll find that there are things in the middle that don't get ground. Huh? So what is it saying? It is saying center yourself in God and let the other thing just go around. Don't get ground by the world by forgetting your own divinity, forgetting that your divine self. And when I say divine self, not by saying that I am divine, but by doing your actions in such a way that you see the divinity manifested in you. Okay? Thank you very much.
I like your ideas. They're really good. One thing I would like to hear more about, I was raised a theist. And God had a certain place in my life that was very important. And God still is, but I look at it entirely differently than I did as a young person. That I see, if I were an atheist, for example, I would probably be feeling that there is a divine within myself, or a wiser part of myself, that is the same as any God, including a God that's outside of myself.
You know, that what we believe is that everything is God. That's what the true Vedantic philosophy believes. That everything is nothing but God. The only thing is for us to realize that. And what it's saying is that we have forgotten who we are. We have forgotten our divine heritage. And so this is like a hospital to be healed. And we are learning by all our mistakes. And each time, you know, if you see, there's a book by Many Masters, Many Souls. If you read that book, it talks about somebody, you know, a girl comes to the doctor, and this doctor may have written about two or three books. I think there are two books that sound the same. And that lady comes to this doctor. She has a disease that cannot be cured so easily. And this doctor tries his best with his medical knowledge. He can't. Then he says, the only thing I can do is regress you into hypnosis. And find out what else is going on. So he regresses her. He's able to get into her past life and understand that certain things happened in her past life. And she goes and she repents for it. And she also says during her hypnosis that There have been many masters that have been helping her throughout, in all her lives. You know, see, we believe in that. You probably don't believe in many lifetimes, but the problem is we believe in rebirth. That's a very strong thing because, you know, you look at it this way. All of us have a body, a mind, and an intellect. These are the three instruments that a human being has. So when the physical body dies, there are thoughts that are there in that mind and intellect that are very strong. The very strong ones don't just disappear. They are there, so they need to manifest. In order for it to manifest, you have to take another physical body. That's the whole idea. And that is why there is a rebirth. And because of that physical body that you take, you go on taking the physical body as long as you have those thoughts. And once when all those thoughts are dissolved, then you go back to to Godhead, which is your nature. That's what we believe.
Thank you very much for sharing your wisdom with us. And thank you for mentioning Clucking Clucks of India. And I have to tell you folks that it started in India, but it's very much alive here. And among us, we have, where is Lou? She's a trained, Lou is a trained,
Laughter Yoga,
yes. I mean, I'm trying to think of the word, you know, she can conduct, and we should do this. I mean, yeah. I've done it myself.
It is.
A couple of years ago. It's really fascinating.
It is good.
Experience. So thank you for reminding us.
Mahadevji, your 10 principles are very process-oriented.
Yes.
Does Hindu have something corresponding to the 10 commandments, which are not process-oriented, which are absolute right and wrongs?
Yes, there are. That is what we call Sanatana Dharma. Those are called eternal values. Sanatana means eternal. Dharma means the values that we do. And those are, you know, like the principle of reincarnation is one of those. The law of karma is another one of those. So like that, I gave you two of those. And I can put up the whole list sometime, yeah.
I was curious, one of the things that has always interested me, kind of fascinated me about Hinduism in general, is the idea that, and you touched on it in talking about God isn't everything, but the idea of sort of being able to pick people having a particular affinity for a particular incarnation of God. And I wonder if you might talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
And in your own personal experience.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the incarnations are meant for you to focus on one particular form of the Lord. See, Hinduism, quote, we call it actually Sanatana Dharma. Hinduism is not a real word. Hindu became because people occupied an area near the Sindhu River, and the Persians called them Sindhu, became Hindu. That's it. But the real philosophy is called Sanatana Dharma, means values that are eternal. That means anybody can follow that. You know, you don't have to have a particular religious dogma. Now, to answer your question, God comes in so many varieties, so many forms, that it's very natural for us to, you know, you can look at that. He came as Christ. He came as Buddha. He came as different people, you know, incarnations. Those are called incarnations of the Lord. Vishnu, Shiva, all those things. Now, so when you follow a particular incarnation, you focus on a particular aspect. And your mind becomes focused in one thing. What happens as you follow it and go to the end, you see that the whole thing opens up. And you understand that everything is one. You see, it's a very beautiful thing. Because, see, it's called henotheistic. It's not monotheistic or polytheistic. It's called henotheistic. That means one God, but many forms. In fact, everything is a form of God. Everybody is a form of God. That's what we believe. The animals, the birds, the trees, the you, me. But they're all different ways. They're not manifested. The divinity is not manifested. But in people like Christ and Buddha and Krishna, it's manifested because the intellect is it's pure, the mind is pure. There are no negativities, there's no nothing, there's no judgment, there's no nothing. In all our mind we have judgment and this and that, and that is the reason, see, we have to go beyond the mind. And when you transcend the mind, you become that. Not become that, you realize that, because you are already that. Okay, that's the philosophy. Yes, sorry.
You had said that the scorpion, for instance, is just acting naturally when you step on it. But then you also said that people, if we're thinking, we can't be angry. But it seems to me anger is an appropriate boundary violation. If you step on me, I get angry.
Yes,
it seems natural enough. if potentially unskillful. The question is how to be skillful in my response.
Okay. Yeah, see, when you get, it is natural to get angry in the beginning, but don't react. Don't respond in a very violent way. Because there are different responses that you can give, isn't it? You can tell the person off, you know, hey, don't do that again. You know, you did it once, it's okay, but, you know, don't do it again. But if if it goes up to violence, then you're impulsively reacting. But if your mind can think a little bit, it'll understand that, hey, maybe that person made a mistake. See, it's possible the person made a mistake. But it's possible, of course, he also did it deliberately. But you see, there's no way of telling that. Maybe you can tell that also, yes. But if you know that the person did it deliberately, then you can certainly tell that person that, hey, look, you know, it's okay once, but hereafter, watch yourself. Because it's not fair. Just try talking. You know, see, because all I'm saying is interpose an interval between the time that you get angry. Because just flaring up causes a lot of damage. But when the thought process is there, in fact, that person also might transform by what you do. You might change the person's perspective completely. You might do something good for that person. Because he realized, hey, you know, I such a nice person. You know, I did something against this person, but yet he's so cool. He doesn't care. So that prospect, you know, that idea can come.
Well, I'm afraid we're out of time now.
Yeah.
So thank you very much.
Yeah, I'll be here so you can answer. I'll be here.